Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing two interviews with Scott Kuiper and Kelly Elizabeth Smith. Both Scott and Kelly are students at the FSU Oslo Conservatory for Actor Training, and they're both appearing in the very first production of the year, The Actor's Nightmare and The Real Inspector Hound, absurdist, delightful, hilarious theater. I'm playing Scott's interview first, and I'm preceding it with a review by Sharon Leslie of The Actor's Nightmare, because Scott is the actor who is having the nightmare. You will hear in the review what Sharon says about his performance, and you will hear me refer to it also in our interview. Obviously, I'd seen the production before I interviewed Scott, but I interviewed Kelly before I saw it, so I don't get to tell her how wonderful her performance was. But believe me, it was. And if you haven't gotten your tickets for The Actor's Nightmare and The Real Inspector Hound, you should run right out, because you get an opportunity to see these performers before you have to buy Broadway tickets to see them. And they are both wonderful and incredibly worth seeing, as are these particular theater pieces. So now, hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive, finding wisdom's other words. Oh, from nowhere, sitting in my own soft lap, with all the time for us to chat, and my resources, oh,
welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about being who you really are. I interview people who make their living or their life with an art, because when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. The two interviews that I'm airing today are interesting because they demonstrate two very, very different ways of arriving at who you really are. In Scott's interview, you can hear a young man thinking, well, I'm this, no, I'm that, no, I'm this, oh my God, I'm an actor. And having finally had what he calls his epiphany, he jumps in with all of his feet, all of his energy, all of his talent. And then there's Kelly, who knew from the beginning, from the start, who she was and what she needed to do. So they make a very lovely contrast, and they arrive at exactly the same place. I know who I am. And you can hear it in both of these still quite young people. So, well, I'm going to start out, as I said, reading Sharon Leslie's review of The Actor's Nightmare. And following right on the heels of that will be my interview with Scott. The Actor's Nightmare by Christopher Durang, the opening performance of the FSU Oslo Conservatory season. It is full of what nighttime talk show host Dick Cavett called the migraines of the acting profession. Durang, whose specialty is absurdist comedy, wants us in the audience to not only identify with George, the man caught in the dream, but to squirm, squeal, and sweat along with him. George is performed with an everyman quality reminiscent of James Stewart or Tom Hanks by second-year conservatory, I hate to use this word for him, student Scott Kuiper. He draws you into the character and the situation by underplaying the inner hysteria, yet never loses a moment, nor never lets us lose a word. That is what is called making something very hard look easy. The storyline in this piece has an absurd quality, like dreams. It jumps around without much apparent logic, which is half of the fun. George is an accountant, at least he thinks he is, who has wandered onto an empty stage. The harried stage manager, played by Danielle Ranella, appears and says, "Eddie's been in a car accident and you have to go on for him." From this point forward, we're off to the races. George keeps trying to understand what is going on as he is buffeted in and out of iconic pieces of theater. Private Lives by Noel Coward, Hamlet by Shakespeare, Waiting for Godot by Samuel Beckett, and a scene from A Man for All Seasons. George does his best to guess at the lines and appropriate behavior called for in the scenes, but obviously fails miserably. Well, it is an actor's nightmare. The play is witty, and the humor is appealing, with much laughter emanating from the audience and from me. As for the actors playing actors, Gillian Courtney carries off the style of Noel Coward. Kelly Elizabeth Smith moves from the high style of Noel Coward to Beckett in a garbage can scene with ease and charm. Mike Perez brings weighty Elizabethan grandeur to the scenes from Hamlet, and Wyatt McNeil makes the executioner dark and dangerous. Greg Lemming has directed another engaging night in the theater. The Actor's Nightmare requires from a director not only knowledge of the different styles of acting, but also ease with different approaches to theatrical presentation. Lemming shows that in spades. Sometimes, playwright Christopher Durang can go overboard with his referencing well-known plays, but this work will always have great human appeal.
So I'm here with Scott Kuiper, who is George Spelvin in The Actor's Nightmare. You were amazing.
Thank you very much, Lynn.
I think that must be one of the most difficult roles ever written. Mm. Because it's so easy to act it. It's so hard to do what you did.
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult fine line that you have to walk throughout the entire thing. It's a half an hour of what could be known as the same joke the entire time. Finding that those different nuances to keep the audience on their toes is difficult, and I wish I could say I could take the credit for all of it, but it's definitely a team effort.
The production is wonderful, the show is terrific, the acting is wonderful, the directing is wonderful, but nobody can help you or hurt you to do what you did. Mm. I mean, really? So, I want to talk a little bit more about that, and I had a reviewer with me, and she reviewed it, and she compared you to James Stewart and Tom Hanks.
Oh, wow.
Right. So everybody, come out and see this, because seeing Scott's performance, it was really wonderful.
Wow, thank you, Lynn.
You're welcome, dear. So I interview people who make their living or their life with an art, and I only ask one question, and it is, I'm assuming the art to which you're giving your life is acting.
Right.
Yeah, good. So the question is, do you remember, can you tell me, the very first time performing, being looked at, telling stories, getting attention, acting, if you knew what it was, you know?
You know, I had always had a huge imagination as a kid, and I would spend hours and hours and hours outside playing in the yard, coming up with different things. And well, ever since I was 3 till I was probably 12.
Yes. Okay, and what kind of imaginary?
I loved whales. I loved marine life, marine mammals, everything about it. So I'm from Arizona, so everyone in Arizona has a swimming pool. And it would get windy on some days, and leaves would get blown into the swimming pool. And I'd take it upon myself to put my goggles on and, you know, pretend to fall backwards like I was scuba diving. And I'd go down, and I'd pick up all the leaves inside of it, and we had this blue plastic bin that I would fill up with water, and I'd place all the leaves in them, calling them different types of fish. And I fully believed that I was a marine biologist. I loved it. I never really realized that what I loved about that wasn't the fact that it was marine biology. I think what I loved about it the most was that how fun it was to play and how fun it was to believe in that. But, you know, I really, really loved marine biology, thought I was going to be doing that. I went all the way up thinking that...
Okay, wait. So you're saying there's no acting in school, there's no drama class, there's no shows, there's... All right, great. So then what happened?
I went all the way up to high school in my junior year and took chemistry and realized that my dream for being a marine biologist was over. I just was not a very math savvy mind. Still am not to this day. But no, I mean, I was a singer. I sang in the Phoenix Boys Choir as a kid, and that really fostered a lot of being able to be a part of a group, following direction, you know, adapting to notes or something like this and that. We would go on tour to San Francisco, and there was always this kind of sweepstakes tickets that we would sell. So that really fostered me in terms of being able to talk to other human beings, because my mom would take me out to the movie theater, and we'd sit out there, and people would be walking, and I would just walk right next to them with my little clipboard and my blazer and tie, and I'd say, "Hey, excuse me, how are you doing? I'm doing this thing for Phoenix Boys." I had my whole routine, and my mom always tells me, you know, I was just a natural at it, and I think all these different types of things, I wasn't acting. All these different things lead up to what I do today. I played a lot of sports. I was very diverse. It's helpful because you learn a lot of skills. All of that is what we as actors need.
So when did you begin to think of acting?
I went into college at Azusa Pacific University. Actually, I was being scouted as a pole vaulter for the track team. Yeah, my junior and senior years. And then I got injured quite badly. I was a swimmer, a diver, and then I would go into soccer season being a goalkeeper, and then that would lead me into pole vault. But that year I decided I wasn't going to swim, I wasn't going to play soccer, I was going to do, you know, just strict pole vaulting. I just wasn't in shape like I should have been. So going into my freshman year of college, I said, okay, well, it must not be pole vault for me. So I went in as a music major because I love to sing, and I played a little piano. And it was good, but I realized it's too late in my life for me to become a virtuoso pianist. You know, it just wasn't, I could feel it in my heart that it just wasn't what I wanted to do. That summer, I was just driving down the road, and all of a sudden I had an epiphany. I was like, I'm supposed to be an actor. And it was about 1 o'clock in the morning, and I go home, and I wake my parents up, and I say, "Mom and Dad, I'm going to be an actor." And to my mom and dad, that's a very scary idea, you know, because they were very supportive of my music career. But for me, just to say, "Hey, I'm going to be an actor," they were like, "Well, okay," you know. So they were very good at supporting me, and it was a difficult road, but...
So did you change your major?
Yeah, I changed my major. I decided I would just audition for the shows and for the plays. The first play I auditioned for was The Drowsy Chaperone, but that was before I even was like, okay, I'm going to be an actor. And I was like, yeah, I'll try this, and didn't get in that one because I'm just not a tap dancer. Then I went and auditioned for How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. Was one of the company members in that and just found a lot of fun and just really, really enjoyed it. And then from there, I was in Merrily We Roll Along, which is a great role. And then after that, they were doing either Hello Dolly and Much Ado About Nothing. And no offense to Hello Dolly, but I said, I would much rather be in a Shakespeare show than in Hello Dolly. And I kind of made that aware to my professors, and they were so supportive of me and kind of fostered and saw this potential in me. And so I got Benedick, and we played a lot of vaudeville in that, and I really, really enjoy vaudeville, that kind of slapstick kind of humor of characters who are maybe overly confident and then realize they don't know
anything.
Know
anything,
as
right, you know? Right, right.
So, but, I mean, it was fun. I really, really enjoyed it. And after that, I was in a Oscar Wilde show called An Ideal Husband. My senior year, I also decided I'm gonna make a demo reel. And I did a lot of student films, stuff like that. And it was a good time.
So the decision, I'm really an actor. Everything that followed there in school confirms for you this is right.
Yeah, it did. And my professors kind of had been telling me that. And I auditioned for Erda's, and met Greg and Andre, and I kind of was in a little disbelief that I was so desired by these different schools. And that morning, the morning after Erda's, Greg sent me an email. And hopefully Greg doesn't listen to this, but he sent me an email saying, just want to let you know we can't make any offers at this time, but we are really, really interested, yada, yada, yada. And I kind of read that email back to my professors, and they're like, oh, he wants you.
He wants you.
You know? And that was so strange to me. And I like I said, one of my alumni, one of my friends, had gone to the Oslo, and I knew about it a little bit, and next thing I know, I'm in Sarasota, Florida, you know, so.
Well, it's delightful. You didn't know where you were going, but you knew where it was when you saw it, sort of, and then it had a life of its own.
Yeah. I mean, I criticize myself sometimes with trying to control my life a little too much, but maybe in hindsight, I was getting
thrown around. It was a waste of time, right?
Yeah, I was kind of getting dragged around that I didn't realize, you know, I have goals, and I work hard.
Yeah, but it seems to me that, yeah, well, that's clear, but it seems to me that your goals, they're not binding on what happens to you.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I guess that's true. You know, I kind of take it day by day. And,
well, I think what you're saying is that you don't take it day by day, but in fact, you might want to think more about that. It's just it's a lovely story.
Yeah,
and the other thing that's lovely about it is your, sort of your innocence about it. It's almost as though you really don't understand how good you are.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't like to go down that path, you know, because a lot of people are in, you know, a lot of people have contributed a lot to that. And yeah, I mean, it is a little bit of how I was raised, and you know, maybe this is, I was born to do this, you know, that kind of thing. But I think it's so important for an actor to realize why it is that we do this. It's not for the final bow, it's not for some type of glory, but it's to honor these characters or tell something that will make someone leave the theater in a different state that they came to it in. And that's not to say that people have to be crying after a really dramatic show, but maybe they think of something or learn something a little about themselves or about others. And it's a difficult thing to do, to have that kind of a mindset of, okay, I'm going to change somebody's life today, but all you can do is say, I want to honor this character as much as possible. And I'm going to do it I'm going to work as hard as possible in order to do it. And if the result is good or, you know, stand out, then so be it. But I don't ever want to become that kind of a guy where people are like, oh, he's so arrogant, he knows how good he, you know. I don't know. That, and
I do think that there's a very thin line between recognizing and accepting your value and being arrogant.
Yeah, I need to learn how to find that, and we're working on that a little bit. And that's another reason I came to grad school, because I could have graduated with my BFA from Azusa Pacific, and it's a great BFA. The Los Angeles circles are really starting to become aware of Azusa Pacific, which is a small private college, you know. And I could have done that. I could have auditioned for a bunch of commercials and done commercials, and you know, but that's not what I wanted to do. That kind of work wasn't going to be fulfilling for me. And I'm not trying to knock anyone that does that, but I want to become the type of leading man that people remember these characters. Not necessarily the man. I mean, to go back to the Tom Hanks thing, we remember Forrest Gump because of the humanity inside of that man.
Yes.
Sure, people win Academy Awards for that kind of thing, but again, I think if you ask those kinds of actors who play those kinds of characters, they'll tell you, okay, sure, the Academy Award, it was nice, but that's not why we do it.
No. And well, we're happy to have you.
Thank you, Lynn.
And I'm looking forward to everything you do.
Yeah, come see The Liar and Macbeth as well.
You just tell me a little bit about The Liar.
The Liar, it's a David Ives adaptation. It's an old French play that he adapted it from. And it's a riot. It's going to be so fun. I'm playing Durant, who is the liar. And it's a great, great company piece. Lots of fun slapstick humor, different wordplay, you know, tongue-in-cheek kind of stuff.
Your favorite stuff.
Yeah, I know. I love it. And so it's going to be a really high-energy show. And I think it's going to be really stand out for us as a conservatory. I mean, the staff and faculty selected a great season for us. And
who's directing The Liar?
His name is Justin Lucero. He's an outside director. He assistant directed Michael Donner Edwards and Frank Galati last year on Both Your Houses and Our Betters, as well as Peter Amster on Matchmaker. He's a great, great director with a great mind and visual mind. And I think we're gonna make something really, really special.
Well, I'll be there.
Great.
Thank you so much,
yeah,
Scott.
Thank you, Lynn.
So I hope that you heard what I heard in this interview. This is a young man who always had an extremely strong hold on what he loved, essentially who he was. From the beginning, his imagination was so important to him, and it played out in pretending he was a scuba diver, that leaves were fishes. But that didn't stop him from loving using his body in sports and believing that that was another place that he could find himself. It does seem as though marine biology would have had Scott, or pole vaulting would have had Scott, if other things hadn't intervened and allowed him to discover clearly what he should be doing. When you see Scott on stage, you know he's made the right choice. And I hope that having listened to him and having heard Sharon's review, you've already bought your tickets. So now, Kelly. Kelly, who, I don't like to preempt this, but this amazing story of this, you know, 4, 5, 6-year-old child who was so clear about who she was and what she wanted that she wouldn't nap because she didn't want to. And luckily for Kelly, and luckily for us, she was surrounded by people who didn't try to break her of being herself, but encouraged her and allowed her to develop this glorious spirit and this wonderful talent, which you can see on stage, especially, well, I was going to say especially in the real Inspector Hound, because she has a bigger part, but in The Actor's Nightmare, you can see the range of her talent, which Sharon alludes to in her review, how she can do Noel Coward, and she can do Samuel Beckett, and she can do the farce of The Real Inspector Hound all beautifully. So now, hear from her own lips, Kelly Elizabeth Smith.
Okay, I'm here with Kelly Smith.
Kelly is appearing in The Actor's Nightmare and The Real Inspector Hound. Okay, so I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And it's clear that that is what you are intending to do.
Yep.
Right?
That's okay. The plan.
Yeah, right. And so I only ask one question. And, well, the art to which it looks like you're trying to give your life is acting. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay, good. So the question I ask is, can you remember what was the very first moment in your life when you thought that performing, having people look at you, standing on the table, telling stories, any of that was attractive, called you?
Yes.
Yeah.
It actually goes back very far. I was and a lot of this has been recounted to me by my parents. Mm-hmm. You know, I was very, very young in preschool, kindergarten age. I went to a Montessori school. So they were very in touch with the children and each child's needs and their personalities and things like that. So it was really lovely. And I was very misbehaved. And I wouldn't take naps. I would try to put on a show for the other kids during nap time.
Okay, we're talking about 6, 7,
yeah,
like that?
Yeah.
You don't remember, I won't nap.
I do remember slightly I won't nap, but I didn't know it was such a big problem. It was to the point where they were almost going to kick me out of the school.
Really?
So, I wouldn't follow directions really at all.
Little rebellious.
Rebellious, yeah. So, they were talking to my parents about it, and they said, okay, I think that the problem is that Kelly's really creative, and she needs to do something with that. So they had this theater camp.
Okay, before you go on, I want to go back to I put on shows for the kids.
Right.
Do you remember any of that?
A little bit.
What did they tell you? What kind of show? I mean, did you sing and dance? Did you tell stories? Did you pantomime?
Yeah, there was like a stuffed animal that we were allowed to have with us when we were napping. So I remember like using that as the catalyst for the story, whatever was going to happen. So I remember like having my little teddy bear and like seeing another kid from across the room and catching their eye and thinking, oh, this is my chance, you know? So then I'd kind of make up some kind of story about it, and then that's when it became a problem because it was disrupting.
Then they said, in their wisdom, you know, it's not just that Kelly's a pain in the ass. She's, you know, she's creative, and to their credit, instead of punishing this, we should encourage it.
Yes.
So there was this theater thing attached to the school, so mm-hmm. What happened?
So then I went and became a part of this theater camp. And
were there other kids your age?
Yes, there were other kids my age, not necessarily from the school,
right?
From different places, which was already like, whoa, what an experience! There are other kids other than the kids that go to my school, and we would do all kinds of shows at this camp. There we did Oliver, which was my first show ever.
And so you were in it.
I was in it, yeah. And then that's when I was bitten by the bug, they say.
So this is your first show that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
And are you saying, I thought, oh, this is it, this is what I want to do, or I love this, mm-hmm. or
oh,
more,
yeah.
more of this, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, I immediately felt that that was my calling.
Okay, so the camp continues to give you more of this. And how is it that you see shows?
I begged my dad to take me to see The Lion King. And so we went. And I was so amazed. It was the most amazing thing to me. And this is, for my parents, this is way weird for them. Because we don't come from a very artistic background. Have a child
God.
That was this...
Yes. You're a changeling.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Where did she come from?
Exactly. They say that all the time.
Yeah.
They say that all the time.
Yeah. It sounds like, although they didn't really understand you, they didn't try to control you or stop you. Right?
No.
Good for them.
No.
Good for them. Because that must have been difficult, strange, odd.
Yeah, and there were a few moments where it was a little bit like, okay, well, Kelly, you kind of have to realize that you don't really make money doing this.
Yeah, I imagine it was later.
A little later, yeah. Right. The years went by.
Right. At this point, they're just indulging their somewhat unusual child.
Right.
So here we have you as a very young child having fallen in love with this thing and really, you know, asking for more and more and more of it, and they're indulging you to the extent that they can.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is just elementary school. What happens? I mean, are you in Montessori all the way through elementary school?
No, I do go to public elementary school and middle school, high school. So it was for that. That was a little bit harder. That was a little bit harder. There was not as much room for me to
be Kelly.
Be Kelly, yeah. But I loved learning. And I love book learning. And I still do love history and math and science. And,
okay.
You know, all these other things.
When did you decide? When did you think this was a life? Do you know?
I think I really knew for sure probably in high school. Probably very early in high school. I always said, this is what I want, but it was always a question of, can I?
Yeah, right.
And
I imagine from what you said earlier, and from what I would have imagined anyway, that your parents were not going, oh, good!
you know,
they weren't, right.
As the years progressed, it became more of an, oh, no.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, okay. So was there a drama class in your school? Did they do plays? Did you?
Not in the school system. There was very little of that, of the drama club, the arts. I was in band and choir, thank God, because that kind of helped me get through. But I did a lot of shows outside of school. So I would do community theater and some semi-professional in the area.
Yeah, and so your parents were happy to go see you. They didn't say, don't audition.
Okay. No.
They had no idea where this was going.
I don't believe that they did.
No.
It's not something we talk about that often, believe it or not, because it's been such a thing in my whole life that it's kind of like, okay, well, why do we even need to talk about how I've gone through my life and how they've been with what they've been thinking this whole time. Because that's just been my life. I've just been experiencing it. I'm only 23. I always forget.
That was good. I'm sorry this isn't video. But what I'm thinking is that this is so anathema to your parents. This is so not what it seems to me that they would have to be knocked over the head to really believe that you were going to do this.
I'm very persistent. I was a very determined child.
Well, yeah, I mean, you wouldn't nap. I mean, you wouldn't even pretend to nap. You know, another
right.
child who didn't want to nap would lay there like a good kid and keep her eyes closed or whatever, but you didn't even do that,
no.
right? Right. So it does seem like a kind of driven thing.
Oh, yes.
Yeah? Yeah,
definitely.
So high school also didn't have drama, any of that, but you found, by yourself, you located the community theater,
yeah.
you found out what the plays were, you auditioned. Musicals, straight plays?
Both.
Both?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have any acting classes?
In the summer, I would still, because my parents worked, they needed to get
you somewhere, right.
I would have summer theater camps, which they have for all ages, thankfully, at the local fine arts center that was in my town. And so, thankfully, I had training from a very young age throughout high school.
All right.
And that would be during the summer. So it was like, during the year, it's regular school, and during the summer, it was drama school, basically.
Right.
So that's when I was kind of being trained, and I was also being trained, I would consider practical application to be training. So doing shows.
Yeah, I'm thinking you're being directed, right?
Right, yeah, from a very young age. During the school year, I would, go to school throughout the day, go home, eat a little bit of food, and then my mom, being the wonderful woman she was, would drive me to my rehearsal.
Right.
And then pick me up from rehearsal, take me home, go to bed, do it all again.
Wow. So you were really in training for this career.
Yeah.
And sometime in high school, do you remember it as a moment, or just at some point you understood that you had made the choice? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I think it was doing Romeo and Juliet, which is funny because I just came from class just now doing scene work on Romeo and Juliet, so kind of going back to, I think I was 15 years old.
Were you Juliet?
I was playing Juliet.
And that's how old she was?
Yeah, around that time, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I felt at that point in my life that I needed to tell that story, you know, and that was when I realized that I didn't want to be an actor for me. I wanted to be an actor for the world. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to keep this art, this language, this beautiful, beautiful old stuff alive. And so I think that's when I really decided that it was what I was going to do.
What's interesting to me about this, and, you know, I run into it a lot, is that this seems to have existed sort of full-blown inside of you. It didn't come from anybody. It didn't come from any training you had. It didn't come from your history. It just came with you. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So sometime around the time of 15, you have decided that this is something to which you must give your life.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you go to college?
Yes. Yes. I went to, I did go to Baldwin Wallace University, and that's in this kind of tiny town of Berea, Ohio, which is outside of Cleveland, not very far from where I grew up. And I initially went for musical theater. I was in the Conservatory of Music.
That's an interesting choice, given what you were saying about Shakespeare.
Yeah, it is. It is. Mostly because I felt at that time, being kind of the young, naive person that I was, that there are no jobs in being a classical actor.
And there are all these jobs in musical theater.
There were more, in my opinion. I thought, oh, but there are more. Yeah. And I just kind of auditioned for this program on a whim. Mm-hmm. I didn't think I would. It's very selective. And a lot of the graduates are on Broadway right now.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't think I would be accepted. So I kind of was like, okay, I'll just audition because it's right here. It's in my own backyard.
Right.
Why not do this audition for this college conservatory program? And then, of course, I got in. And thrilling. It was very thrilling. Went, and I did a year of that program, the musical theater program, and I decided I don't want to be a musician. I really want to be a classical actor. So, so there was this guy, this teacher, who was coming in brand new the year that I was a freshman, and his name is Adam Heffernan, and he was kind of fresh out of, like, grad school, fresh out of the profession of being a classical actor. And he was taking over the theater program, not the musical theater program, but the theater program. And I immediately felt like, I'm going to train with this guy. He's going to make me into a classical actor.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I just basically switched over and said, okay, well, I'm going to be a theater major. And while I do that, I'm going to double major in business management. Just to keep myself busy.
Yeah. Right. Well, and to address some of the concerns of your parents.
Right.
Because we haven't said, in the last 5 minutes, that their response to all this must have been, you know, are you sure, and there's no money, and what about a backup, and
all those things.
So the school just let you switch? They didn't say, they just said fine?
Yeah. The people, the department heads of the musical theater program are very influential, but also very kind, and very perceptive. So then they care about their students. So they saw that I really wanted to be, a different kind of artist.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that this art, that kind of art doesn't have its merit and its beauty, because it does, and obviously I love it as well. But that wasn't what I needed at that time. So, and they said, okay, well, Adam just got here, and isn't he great? Why don't you go over there? And so
this is a little like the Montessori response.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Okay, she needs something else. Let's put her over. Right.
Exactly. Thankfully.
You've been very lucky.
I have been. I've been extremely, extraordinarily lucky.
I think so, you know, because other people might have responded in a lot of other ways.
Mm.
They let you be you.
Right.
In a lot of ways. It's amazing. Okay, so I'm assuming that you studied with him and
mm-hmm.
you liked it.
Yeah, loved it. And he prepped me for doing the audition that I did in New York, which ultimately got me here.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, it's really just been...
Yes.
You know.
I'm sorry, again, we don't have the video, so you could see Kelly moving her hands around because neither one of us has language for what that is. But
it
is kind of a greased slope for you,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And so, okay, so you, did you graduate from there? Is that, or,
mm-hmm.
And then you said, let me go to another, to a graduate conservatory, and you went to New York to audition for them.
Yes.
And you got accepted here,
yes.
And you said, whoopee, and here you are.
Yep.
Right? Okay, good. All right. Okay, good. So let's talk about the plays.
Great.
Okay, tell me who you are in them, what they're about, how they feel to you, what people can expect,
great.
All that.
Okay, so we're doing two plays in one night. So The Actor's Nightmare is the first one, and it's very short, probably like... I don't know. We haven't actually finished rehearsing it yet, so I don't know how long it is, but I can imagine it'll be somewhere in the vicinity of, like, 20 minutes.
20 minutes? Wow.
Like that.
Yeah, right. Okay, good.
Yeah, very short. I wonder if it says it on here, but I'm looking at my script. I brought it just in case I needed it. It doesn't say, but it's somewhere around there. And it is the scenario that there's this man having a dream,
mm-hmm.
and the play is the dream, that he is suddenly an actor, and he's an accountant. An accountant is having a dream that he's an actor,
right.
And that he's in all of these shows, then he doesn't know any of his lines. He doesn't know anything. It's actually a common dream, I think, that people
yes.
actually do have.
Right.
And so in that play, I am one of the actors who is, there are a few different plays. One of them is Private Lives, and another is Hamlet. At one point, he's on stage and is supposed to do To Be or Not to Be and doesn't know anything. And then another one is Samuel Beckett, which is a very specific style of theater. It's kind of absurdism. And A Man for All Seasons, which is when he ultimately... comes to the end of the dream without giving it too much away. So I play the actress who does part of Private Lives,
mm-hmm.
which is like very British and, you know, RP and very stylized and kind of has this fun sort of comedic,
mm-hmm.
witty British banter. And then I do the Samuel Beckett section, which is very fun because it's weird. It's a weird theater. Like the weirdest plays that you can ever see, basically. And here's this guy who's an accountant trying to...
Having a nightmare,
right. And so that's pretty much the actor's nightmare. And the other show is The Real Inspector Hound, which is probably going to run a little bit longer than Actor's Nightmare. Real Inspector Hound, I bet, will probably be more like half hour, 45 minutes,
mm-hmm.
something like that. And that is, it's kind of a funny, little piece. This guy, Tom Stoppard, wrote it, and he was making fun of the success of Agatha Christie's The Mousetrap, which is the longest, one of, I think it's the longest running show in history, pretty
yes.
much.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this silly little murder mystery, you know, so...
So Tom Stoppard said, really?
Yeah. Yeah, Tom Stoppard was like, okay, what's going on? And he wrote this play, which is a satire of that play. And there are these critics that are in the audience watching the play within the play, and they slowly end up becoming a part of the story. So it's kind of like weird and existential in that way. And Tom Stoppard putting himself onto... this idea that he has about the trope
commentary.
Of murder mystery. Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so in that, I play one of the characters in the play, within the play. So there are there are three women. There's the housekeeper, and there's the young ingenue, and then there's the leading lady, who's kind of this femme fatale sort of person. And I play the young one. And I end up kind of getting... it's sort of a suspect of the whodunit, who killed. There's a dead body on stage, so it's kind of, you know, who did it, who's the murderer, and it's quite fun.
All right, great.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell me about The Liar. Do you remember when that's going to run?
The Liar is going to be after The Real Inspector Hound and Actor's Nightmare. So,
is it the second show?
It's the second show.
Okay, all right.
And so that is another satire of a style, which is restoration, and that's sort of this French comedy, very silly, and it's about like a love triangle and this guy who keeps lying about everything basically, and gets himself into a whole mess of trouble. And it's written in iambic pentameter, which is fascinating because it's contemporary language but written in verse.
So, difficult to write and difficult to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It'll be a really interesting, fun challenge.
Right.
And then after that, we have Macbeth that we're doing.
Okay. Are you in all of these?
I'm in all of these, yes.
Okay. So, who are you in The Liar?
In The Liar, I play Clarice, who is, again, the young girl character. And she gets kind of caught up in the lies of this guy. So, I'm engaged to... someone else, and I kind of get like sort of interested in this other person, and then it's a whole mess, and it's a comedy, and it's going to be very, very, very funny.
And it all comes out in the end.
Yeah, and it all works out in the end. And then Macbeth, I'm playing one of the witches and Lady Macduff, so that'll be just crazy. It's Johnny Epstein, who I believe you.
I have.
With.
Yes, I interviewed him.
He'll be directing.
So these are very different.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find one or another of them more comfortable, easier, more like you, more what you want to do, or not?
You know, I don't really have any kind of preference of material. I mean, I love all of these type of things. I tend to, I think, right now have a little bit more success comedically, but that's just right now in my life. You know, there are other points in my life where I don't feel that way, because comedy can be very, very hard.
Yes.
Because it's...
because it's all timing.
It's timing, right.
Right. You either do it or you
right.
don't do it.
Right.
Right.
And sometimes it's like, oh, I got it. And then how do I do it again?
Yeah, there's a very famous story, actually. Sir Laurence Olivier. I believe it was he. He does some kind of splendid, outrageous, terrific performance. He comes off stage, and everybody off stage is applauding and yelling and screaming about how terrific he was, and he's scowling and he's angry. You know this story?
Mm-hmm.
Right, and that's the line, right? He says, yeah, I know, but how do I do it again? Mm-hmm. And I think maybe people are not actors, are not aware of the, what the word I want is, the ephemeral nature of it, the fact that it's not just learning the lines. It's not even getting into the character. There's a zone that you can get into, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not always clear how you get in it from one time to the next, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Right.
It's nebulous.
It's nebulous. That's actually what I was looking for. Right, that's exactly right.
Right.
Well, so I'm looking forward to seeing you in all of these things. I usually ask only one more question, and it is, having given really all of your life to this work in one way or another, right, starting with the teddy bear, right, and anticipating giving the rest of your life to it, what would you say about what that's like?
It's hard. It's very hard, and it requires a lot more bravery and selflessness than I think is realized, because I believe in theater for people, not in theater for me. Although I love being an actor for myself because it feeds my soul and, you know, yada yada. But
not yada yada. No, say it.
Yeah, it does. It feeds my inner, my artist, which is me, and it makes me happy.
Yes, the part of you that instinctively stood up to entertain, to perform, mm-hmm. you came in with that. That is who you are.
Right.
Right? It was spontaneous. It was natural. Right? So that part of you gets fed.
Right.
By doing this thing. It's not vastly different than the teddy bear, really.
Right.
Right? Okay.
Exactly.
But there's another aspect to your desire to do that, and that is?
That is altruism, I suppose. The thing that we give.
Yes.
Which is big, and it's hard, because it's not rewarded, really, with any kind of there's very little financial gain to be had, there's the bravery of bringing one's self onto a stage.
Yes.
Just more difficult than...
than one anticipates when one falls in love with it.
Yeah. Right.
And is that close?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't hear you saying, and so I'm not going to do it.
No.
No. No. No. Well, that's a great place to stop. Thank you very much, Kelly.
Thank you so much.
I am looking forward to it.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Again, you hear what I hope you hear in all of my shows, and that is that it is possible to be who you really are. I don't mean to suggest that being who you really are means there's no price to pay, there's no difficulty. As Kelly so clearly states it, there can be problems anyway, but living the life that you were meant to live, using yourself in the way that feels right to you, brings a joy, brings a contentment, brings a peace that makes it possible to tolerate the price you might have to pay. When you're being who you think you're supposed to be, who other people told you you had to be, when you're trying to be who other people are, the price is ongoing and you don't get the joy and the peace and the contentment. So it is my hope that when you listen to people like Scott and Kelly, you are asking yourself, is this how I'm living my life? Am I doing with my life what fits me, what feels right, that I know that I am being myself and that I am willing to pay the price for it? Well, if that isn't true, if your childhood required you
to leave something behind. If you didn't get the kind of encouragement that Scott and Kelly got, if somebody told you that you shouldn't think like that, act like that, dress like that, talk like that, any of it, well, it may not be too late to recover what you might have lost, to be in this world the person you're supposed to be. And if you want to talk about that, you can find me at my website, thelynshow.com, T-H-E-L-Y-N-N-E, don't leave the E out of Lynn, thelynshow.com. There's a button you can push that says email me. You can email me any questions or comments. You can get me to come and talk to your group or organization. You can buy my book, which is called When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. And you can hear all the shows, including this one, in podcast form. So, as always, I hope that you got something you can use from this show. Something that will bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station, and I sure hope you will be, too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight, no. I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage? Let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated. Oh, leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight, no, no. We will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, I still got some tang, so you won't hear.